In the second Aliyah of Parshas Bo, so we find the continuation into the Makkah of Arba, and here we don't find that this one is explained to Moshe first, although he still knows what's coming. And it's a discussion how exactly to understand that. In the Sefer Sheish Mashzar, which discusses themes that express themselves throughout the Parsha, he notes that the Makos are broken up into three groups, as explained by the Ramban, that the first is to express the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the second grouping is to show his provenance, and the third, his ability to control all of nature. So therefore, each group has three to establish a chazakah, and this last group, however, has four. So in the group of four, Arba seems to be the odd one out, and the nature of its difference is that it's the only one that really could be something that could take place in nature, but here it's a part of this group that is here to refute the Egyptians who thought that nature is in control, and that essentially this is parallel to the message that the Ramban emphasizes later in the Parsha, that we should appreciate that everything that takes place is miraculous. And here we find that something that seems like it could be natural is integrated into the Makos specifically as a part of the message that HaKadosh Baruch Hu actually is controlling nature and not the other way around. And therefore, its specific aspect was of that type, and Moshe was able to figure that out as opposed to all of the other Makos, which were, in fact, chidushim. The Tana de Belio has a comment regarding this makkah, that its impact on the crops was specifically appropriate because here the Jews were made to plant the crops for the mitzvah, and therefore this is what was taken away from them as a midah keneged midah. And this also highlights an aspect of the avdus of the Jews and a nature of avdus in general and its dehumanizing aspect. It's a theme that's specifically relevant to today is Martin Luther King Day, and to recognize the notion of slavery, which is dehumanizing and can't even be defended by any claimed economic benefit. And we see that when it comes to the slavery of the Jewish people, it's expressed in the very beginning of Sefer Shmos that the purpose wasn't to benefit the Mitzrim with the free labor, but specifically to keep them down and to make sure that they wouldn't be able to become a force. So too, we find that the forcing of the Jews to plant the crops was specifically to keep them disabled, and therefore it's appropriate that the Mitzrim should be punished by having the crops taken away from them, recognizing that the forcing of the Jews to plant these crops was specifically an act meant to hamper them. And we find also that Rashi here in Pasuk Yudalid emphasizes the fact that it was only one type of Arba that was involved. In the Sefer Minchas Aaron, he explains why that is and why we're being told about this, noting the Ramban, who quotes from Rabbeinu Hananel, that after this Arba, no other Arba ever consumed Mitzrayim. And the Kli Yakar explains that this is so that future generations will have to explain the Nes, and that there's something happening that impacted the future, and that therefore it never happened again. So if that was a purpose, we don't want to benefit Mitzrayim by having them be protected against any type of infestation. So therefore it's only this one type that had this specific miracle take place that it wouldn't happen again. And specifically here, in terms of the planting of wheat and barley that the Jews had to do, the Midrash Rabbah notes that there was a kfiyas tova that was involved also, because Yosef fed Mitzrayim, and instead of the Jews now being fed as an expression of hakar satov, they were being made to feed, and that's an extra aspect that's also relevant to the nature of this onesh. In Pasuk Yud Zayin, we find Paro asking that he should be spared Rakis Hamavis Hazeh, specifically this one problem. There is an interesting comment in the Torah Tamima, which may be giving Paro a lot of credit, but he points to a Gemara in Maseches Tainis on Dav Ches Mar Aleph, where we learn that in the days of Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, they had both famine and dever happening at the same time, and they didn't want to daven for both. They thought that was asking for too much, so they davened that the famine should be relieved in the understanding that if a Kadosh Baruch Hu was providing food, so then presumably he was also going to allow for there to be life in order to benefit from the food. So therefore, perhaps that's what's going on here also, that maybe arve, which is consuming the crops, is also like famine. And the Medrash Rabbah indicates that the Dever was also continuing to persist together with the other Makos. So along the lines of that Gemara and Tainis, if we could remove the famine, so that would mean there would have to be those who could survive to benefit from it. And this way, this is a way of covering both with one shot. So following this, we read about Makas Choshech. And the Gemara at the beginning of Psachim indicates that darkness is a creation and not merely the absence of light, the subject of a comment of the Netziv over there. This is the position of the Vilna Gaon and his Kol Elyo, based on a pasuk in Yeshayahu, explaining the language of the pasuk over here in Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Many Rishonim did seem to understand differently, although here in this context it seems specifically that we are talking about Choshech as an active creation. And the Midrashim refer to the darkness that was created here as being as thick as a dinar. And that led the Torah Tumima to have a comment, which some consider to be somewhat controversial, that he noted that this idea of a special type of darkness seems to be a violation of the idea that the Chukei HaTeva are not supposed to change, the Yom V'Layu Lo Yishbosu, that the nature of the cycle of day and night are not supposed to change. And therefore, he suggests that this was actually something that physically impacted the eyes of the Mitzrim, specifically, as opposed to the Jews, something along the lines of cataracts. There was some substance in front of their eyes that stopped them from being able to see. There are those who found this interpretation to be somewhat controversial, perhaps because they saw this as somehow minimizing the miraculous nature of what was going on, but others very much praised this interpretation in the Sefer Otzer Plos HaTorah, thought that this was a fantastic interpretation, and there are many who cite this quite favorably. And the Ralbag, he notes already that they had to close off their mouths and their nose in order to stop the darkness from coming in and killing them, which itself indicates that there was some kind of physical substance to it. The Medrash has two different options as to where the Choshech came from. One option is that it comes from the Choshech of Gehenim, which we understand, the darkness that represents isolation and being set apart. But the other idea is that it comes from Choshech Shel Maila, from the Choshech of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which sounds like it's something positive. And this is something that Rabbi Norman Lamb would speak about in his drashos, that there is a advantage sometimes to darkness, to solitude, to being insulated from all of the distractions and all of the noises of the world. He wrote this in 1959. He darshed about this in 1959, so we can only imagine how much more relevant this is today with all of the cacophony of sounds and voices and noises that come from all over. So all the more so, recognizing that sometimes there is a benefit to having a little bit of darkness and a little bit of solitude. And while that can indeed be a source of positive concentration, but there can be a drawing for that for negatively as well, or maybe perhaps for forced introspection, and maybe that's what this medrash is getting at. And perhaps along those lines, Rav Hirsch comments on the language here in Pasuk Chaf Aleph of Vayamesh Choshech, trying to understand exactly what that means, and he notes that that word has roots that seem to have opposite indications. On the one hand, that it seems to mean to touch something, to mashmesh. On the other hand, it also sounds like to something from moving away, as lo yomash, something to distance. And he indicates that that's exactly the point, that they're basically groping because of the darkness. It's a touching without touching, trying to touch, but also not being able to touch, and therefore reflecting the frustration of this specific makkah, and one more attempt to try to bring about a certain kind of reflection and introspection that comes from the frustration of the situation, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu displaying his power to the Mitzrayim and to Paro.